This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Chicago offense.
Matt Forte, Tulane University.
Matt Forte.
Mike Martz. Mike, we talk with Matt Forte once a week.
Oh, my guy. I love Matt. I just love Matt.
What did you love about Matt?
Everything. There wasn't anything he couldn't do. I kept telling them, this guy's, he's not Marshall, but he does the same kind of things that Marshall can do. You know, I just remember right before we're playing Detroit at our place in the opener, and he takes a screen like 90 yards for a touchdown.
Out in the flat with a Kreutz block. It's Forte to the 20.
To the end zone. Touchdown.
Who was that lead blocker?
Holy Kreutz with a block.
The old veteran comes out there, cuts the defender off of his feet.
89 yards on the touchdown by Forte.
And a two-man drill, start a two-man drill. Who does that? Just running through tackles. He's a big guy with speed, and yet he was elusive. And he pounded, buddy. He would take it. He just was such a fabulous player. I mean, he was at least 40 to 50% of our offense there. I mean, he just kept getting him the ball any way we could.
Yeah,
he won that game with a bolt throw down the sideline, caught it in the end zone at the end of the game.
Cutler backpedals, sets, launches for Forte. Diving catch, touchdown! Touchdown Bears! A dramatic catch by Matt Forte.
Underrated, but I still be scoring Matt Forte. Matt Forte with Spiegel and Holmes.
I think we're on record of how important Matt is.
On 670 The Score.
He's important to our show, too. He joins us now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Matt, what's up, man?
What's up, fellas?
It's fun to hear Mike Martz talking about you like that and raving about you. Because I remember being in this chair, or one of these chairs, when Martz was coming here to work. And it was like, oh, you know what? You know what's kind of cool is that Forte can do some of the stuff that Marshall Faulk did. That's really a good fit. And then there he is singing the praises like that. Did you like being a back for Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. Coach Martz had a great offense. It was reminiscent to what the Bears' offense is right now with how dynamic they have as a running game and passing game in tandem, but also how they can disguise the formations from run to pass and what they do with love playing in his offense. And he always had an answer for something. You know, he was one of the only coordinators I would see that wouldn't sit up in the booth. And he would be on the sideline, like on the field, at field level. And obviously he had somebody up there that he was on the radio with, on the headset talking with. But it was interesting that that's how he would get his play calling experience down on field level.
I mean, it brings up an interesting question. I don't think I asked you this like while you were playing. When you come to the sideline, did you talk to your position coach more? Or in the case of having Martz down there, was that ever appropriate for you to go talk to the OC during a game?
Yeah, I mostly talked to my position coach.
Is it Tim Spencer?
Yeah, Tim Spencer for a long time. I also had I forget his name. He was actually Rodney Pete's brother, Skip Pete. That's who it was. Skip Pete. Had Skip Pete for a little bit, and a few other running back coaches. But for the longest tenure, had Coach Tim Spencer, who was really good. And yeah, when we come to the sideline, like you're engaging with your position coach mostly. But when Coach Martz was on the sideline as well, he mostly was talking with the QBs and with the other position coaches to make sure everybody was on the same page. If I saw something that I thought that we could take advantage of, usually he would see it too, but I would go, you know, then and say, hey, Coach Martz, I don't know if you're seeing this, but, you know, on third and medium, they're playing 2-3 techniques, and we might be able to run a trap play, or we may be able to take them out on a screen or something like that. So when I saw something that maybe we weren't taking advantage of, I would go straight to the OC, but most of the time your position coaches is getting a message from him anyway, and then you're talking to them.
Skip Pete is currently the running backs coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
He is.
And his father, mm-hmm. Willie Pete, was also Rodney Pete's father. He was a former running back and running backs coach. So thank you for recalling that name and making me realize just how many people in that family had become NFL coaches. That's amazing. Matt, what was that like watching that game for you on Sunday night with those two offenses going back and forth? Do you enjoy watching a game like that in the NFL?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was a little bit frustrating just because of the back and forth. And, you know, when you're going for your team, you obviously want them to score, but you don't want the other team to score. But I was jumping around again at the first 15 seconds of the game as we get a pick six, you know, excited about that. But then going watching them go back and forth. And as this team, as we talk about week in and week out, how they never see themselves as out of a game, and they're always in it until the last, the very, very last second. And, you know, they actually had a few opportunities to put the game away. And as they go, I guess it's a lesson. It's a lesson learned, too, that as they, you know, march into the playoffs, that when they get into the red zone, to execute and to make the most of those opportunities, because sometimes against these high-powered offenses on other teams, kicking a field goal to go ahead with, you know, not a lot of time left in the game, it doesn't always suffice and to be able to get you a win. So, you know, it was exciting to watch, obviously, back and forth in a high-scoring game, but as a Bears fan and the number one Bears fan, we can't give up, you know, 40-plus points and expect to win games that way, even though we have a high-powered offense ourselves as well.
The coach admitted he should have run the ball more on that field goal drive, Matt.
Yeah. I mean, hindsight is always 20/20 as well. And you think late in the game, that is probably an important a learning aspect, but also an important part that, you know, as play callers and coaches get more experience, that they learn as well. Because when you're going back and forth with another team that can score the ball at any time as well, you want to run the clock down. You want to run the ball to hold possession and also to give them less time to be on the field and to get another score. So that's just one of those review things where I'm guaranteed he's watching film and going back and being nitpicky about his game and his play calling, which is what the good ones really do. And, you know, you see that area right there, and you're like, man, we probably would have done better running the ball in those situations a little bit more.
Whenever I see some of these offenses, it's hard not, knowing that we're going to talk to you, hard to not imagine you in the offenses. And you and Christian McCaffrey are part of a very exclusive club of running backs, considering your dual threat nature. How much fun would you have had in the Kyle Shanahan offense that's being run?
Oh yeah, I mean it's exciting to watch that as well, and to watch other players and how they are used and utilized. I see, you know, CMC motioning out into the slot, you know, running option routes and running slants and different things like that. And those are the things that I did with Coach Marks and with Adam Gase, which were fun. Being put in different positions, split out wide, being in the slot, running, you know, like Coach Marsh talked about, bullets routes from the backfield. And you see those a lot in Kyle Shanahan's. But what I would have been most, I guess, excited about with Shanahan's offense is just that outside zone scheme. And, like, the different things, like, he's one of the rare ones that still uses a fullback instead of using, like, tight ends to come in and do fullback work or, you know, do cut edge blocks on the end and stuff. He still uses, you know, obviously he got a great check. Fullback check, in yeah. Juszczyk. But there was many times where he's confusing the defense where Juszczyk is going in motion and he's sprinting, you know, to one side, and then he does the same motion and he goes to the backside and is cutting off the backside of defensive end. And, man, when you run in zone plays with – lead blocks and back blocks like that, it's hard for the defense to defend. But also, as a running back, you're excited because those defenders have to declare pretty early. Like, they got to, you know, choose their gap, or they're going to fast flow or kind of stay stagnant, and then you kind of get a chance to, you know, be patient back there, set up your blocks, and then pick your, you know, make your decision of where you want to go.
Man, yeah, it's the highest snap percentage of any fullback in the NFL is their guy. They use it more than anybody. And it's got to free up CMC, doesn't it? Like, he knows he doesn't have to worry about one of the dudes who's coming. And once you know what that fullback's doing, then you, I mean, I keep thinking about you telling us in the studio a few weeks ago about just being able to trust your line and go second level. If you can trust your fullback too, then what are you looking, third level? I mean, like, what are you looking for if you know your fullback's going to get somebody too?
Yeah, you're looking second and third level, and when he's going, and you got a guy like that, you know he's gonna go cut the backside off, whether it's a defensive end or a linebacker or somebody's coming back around, and that he's a smart player too. It's just, I mean, it makes it so much easier for you, or takes the pressure off of you to have to deal with the lineman first, so that you can look downfield and you get those chunk plays, those 10, 15, 20 yard runs, those explosive plays that can turn into the 60, 70, you know, 80 yard touchdown kind of burst runs that you can have in those type of offense. So, but yeah, when you got a guy who's lead blocking like that, and you don't have to worry about, man, is he going to get knocked back into me? Is he going to get cut in the hole and muddy up the hole? Is he going to miss the block where maybe he doesn't know? Because the best fullbacks are the ones who know how to run the ball, because they can, you know, maybe they're going to block the weak side linebacker, but his vision is so good, he can read where the defense is flowing, the defensive line, and peek around those blocks and be able to insert where, basically, where you're going to go as a running back, and then you can cut off of his block. So you love fullbacks who can do that. And when I used to have a really good pulling guard who would do that type of stuff too, who had good vision, named Kyle Long. He would pull around on plays, and he would, you know, not just run up in there and, you know, hit somebody in the back that's on his own team. He'd run around and he would find the guy he was supposed to hit, and it would clear up the hole so clear for your boy. And I would, you know, go through there and loved it. Loved doing that.
Kyle Long's going to make his NFL booth debut this weekend.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. He's been working really hard.
Chiefs Raiders. He's the analyst for Chiefs Raiders on CBS. That's pretty damn
cool.
That's
a dope thing, and that's a smart move by them. Because he's really smart, and he's passionate about the game.
He's entertaining. Happy for him. Agreed. Hey, Matt, I saw that this year the Bears have four dudes with 600 receiving yards. Okay? That's the first time that has happened, with four members of one Bears offense having 600 receiving yards or more since? Anybody?
2014.
You did 2014, and who were the dudes? Who were the four dudes on your team? You were one of them, Matt. Who were the others?
I would say me.
Yes.
Alshon Jeffrey, Brandon Marshall, and Martellus Bennett.
It was Earl Bennett.
Earl Bennett. The other Bennett.
Yeah. Oh no, you're right. It is Martellus Bennett. I'm an idiot. It's Alshon Jeffrey, Martellus Bennett, Matt Forte, Brandon Marshall, all with 700 receiving yards. That's the last time that has happened. And maybe I didn't give you guys enough credit. I said on Monday that, boy, that's the first time I ever remember a Bears team that felt like they could go blow for blow with one of the great offenses in the NFL. You could be in one of those 42-38 games. Did you guys feel like you could be in those games with the best offenses in the NFL at the time?
Yeah, definitely. We were in some of those games. We had some high-scoring games.
There were some problems in 2014 defensively.
Yeah. Yeah, there was plenty of, you know, sometimes these games run together, but, you know, there's plenty of times where I feel like I had 100-plus rushing yards and two receivers with 100 receiving yards, and we would almost have to go into overtime to win a game sometimes. But, yeah, we would definitely compete in that aspect that year. I think it was maybe the first year of or maybe first or second year of Trestman being there where, you know, the defensive coordinators really couldn't get a beat on what we were doing, and they didn't really know. We had a young emerging receiver in Alshon, too.
Yeah.
And Martellus was dynamic, as big as he was, too.
Yeah, I'm looking at the schedule, Matt, in 2013. We got the 45-41 game against Washington. You got a 31-30 game against the Vikings.
Yeah, but look at the 14 season.
I don't want to.
Yeah, you do.
No, the back-to-back 50 burgers with a bye in between.
And Matt's right. He had 114 yards in that game against New England, and they lost 51-23. And then the next week he was 55-14. Earlier in the season, Matt had 122 yards against Green Bay, and they lost 38-17.
But I'm going back to the vibes of the first Trestman year. He's right, like 38-31 for a Cleveland game that made you guys 8-6. Like, there are games there where you guys were hanging and putting up numbers in the 30s as needed. So I got to give you guys more credit in terms of that experience.
Yeah, no, we appreciate that. I think during my time in the tenure that I was there, it was an interesting passing of the ships, if you want to say, with offense and defense. I got there, and we had locked down, shut down defense for the longest time with the Briggs, the Peanut Tillmans, the Mike Browns, Urlacher, Tommy Harris. Like, these guys, like, they're giving up 17 points or less a game. And, you know, we're trying to just do our job as an offense, like, guys, we got to score more than 17 points. And, you know, we were successful in that aspect when defense was just shut down and locked down. And then it kind of changed where those guys either it was a lot of turnover where we lost a coach or we changed GMs, and then they get their own guys in. So then we have high-powered offense and then lackluster defense. And so now you see where it's kind of matching each other, where we're taking the ball away like they used to, but also they have a high-powered offense where a dynamic quarterback who can throw the ball down the field, some really good receivers, and some good backs that can run the ball.
What were you thinking back in 2010 as the season was coming to a close and you knew that you were going to be in the playoffs? What were the things that you wanted to prepare yourself for leading into the playoffs?
Well, first, I wanted to go to Green Bay and just end them there because I knew if we did that, they wouldn't make the playoffs. And it came back to bite us in the butt. But we ended up getting that bye, how things ended up shaking out. We got a bye, and then we got to play at home. And we, you know, beat up on Seattle pretty good. And my mindset was going into that as like, look, if we get this home field advantage, and, you know, we love this kind of weather where we're playing, where you can run the ball, play a tough defense, and just be, you know, kind of use your tight ends and your receivers and stuff in a way that is not, you're just methodically going down the field. We're not playing like we're indoor on turf or something like that. We're using the elements, and especially a lot of teams don't want to play out there late in January. So my mindset was like that, and it worked out for the most part, but, you know, obviously fell a little short when it came to the 2010 NFC Championship.
Matt, as always, we appreciate it. Have a wonderful New Year's Eve and a great start to the new year, and thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir. It's been a pleasure in 2025. Looking forward to seeing y'all in 26.
Yeah, hey, let's hope that there's a lot of early January visits from Matt Forte, because that means the Bears are still playing football.
And it has been a pleasure, Matt. We've learned a lot from you. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yes, sir. God bless.
That is Matt Forte. There's some breaking news, and breaking news on The Score is brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories.
So Trayvon Diggs, the former Pro Bowl cornerbacks, actually an all-pro cornerback for the Dallas Cowboys, has been claimed by the Green Bay Packers.
They could use the help. That is according to Fox Sports.
So what's interesting is that there's nothing wrong with Diggs as a player in terms of what he has been recently. The story that emerged is that after their game in Washington on Christmas, he wanted to stay, I guess it was on Saturday, right? He wanted to stay in Washington and spend time with his family. And he asked Brian Schottenheimer, who said no. And then he missed the flight.
So now I have to stay. Now you can't leave.
And a few days later, he got released. When he came back and he showed up, they apparently chose to release him.
The key card didn't work.
So that means he's healthy and he's ready to play. And Green Bay has claimed him. Schefter says it's a waiver claim, which means it wouldn't have even have reached the Bears.
Yeah.
Right? So it reaches the Packers first, who are lower in the standings. Packers claim him. And then there you go. Bing, bang, boom. Either way, Trayvon Diggs might be a Packer and playing for them when the Bears play them, if that indeed is the first-round playoff game.
Yeah, he didn't – I mean, some of the reporting is that he didn't feel comfortable in what Eberflus was running with cover two because of some of his cover skills, that he didn't like what they were doing. We'll see where he lands, and we'll see if it makes a ripple, if it makes a difference. for the teams. The Packers could definitely use him.
Well, now they've got him, and we'll see. I was intrigued by the idea of the Bears making a play. But I mean, they've got guys obviously, and it's late to make a change like that, but with the way that Jalen is struggling and the way that Tyreek is being used, and it's an interesting thing. What we should talk more about the defense, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Later on in the show, we are going to talk more about the defense, and by later, I mean, in the next segment,
it's good time.
We're going to talk about it and talk about where they might be able to get better. And I mean, we are expecting Kyler to return, right? Like, that's a thing for the playoffs, isn't it?
I don't know about that. I'm not holding on to that. You are?
I mean, isn't that what you kind of have to hold on to if you're them? That guy might be able to help you in the playoffs?
I do not believe that. I haven't heard. I mean, I guess they did say hopeful that he will return.
Yeah.
I guess they did say that, but I mean, you're talking about a guy. I mean, we'll see an approximation of an injury report today, and we'll see an injury report tomorrow. Like, if he's not even back practicing until next week, I don't think you can play him in that first round game, can you? I mean, the way, I don't know if they can trust him. I mean, last time you thought he was going to go, he didn't go, and it burned you on game day. It
really burns you on game day. You better know. You better put him through the hardest physical test that you can on Friday so that you can make some choices if that is the case. Hopefully he's going to be all right. But let's talk about the Bears defense and some of their issues, and some of our experts had some thoughts on it as well. We'll do that next here on The Score.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Spiegel and Holmes.
The woo people are out.
Thanks for playing some Wu Tang. That made me feel good.
Chilling with my man Rusty. Ghost is a beast.
Wu Tang is for the children.
Afternoons on The Score.
Here we go. Had to go quick with the play clock running down. He did. It's a boot. Purdy pulling back, stepping forward, throwing on the run. Touchdown! What a play, Purdy! Get his check on the business end. You deserve to dance.
I can't fault the Bears defense for that, where Brock Purdy had the whole game on a string.
The boot scoot?
Yeah, I mean, like, he's scrambling, he's running, he's going back, up. He's running forward now, and then Juszczyk is just standing there waiting. That was some serious stuff.
It was upsetting.
The dancing was upsetting.
Well, the dancing part, but it was upsetting because you've seen Caleb do that to people all season, and then having someone do it to you did not feel good.
I agree.
And then
that.
There was the dancing,
which did not feel good.
McCorkle and him doing the Dougie, people didn't like it. Mm-hmm. They didn't enjoy it.
I love that DeAndre Swift did a little mini, like, split-second version of the Dougie and then waved it off.
That's right.
That's right.
But, hey, Brock Purdy's playing good ball. And it's weird. When we talk about the Bears' defense, you look at that last game and go, was that game an outlier game? But there have been moments, even against Joe Flacco, for example, where the Bears' defense hasn't been as strong as you would like it to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think a big reason why that's the case is because their pass rush has been inconsistent. And then you add the injuries in the back of their defense. People think, oh, you got to shut down corner. Shut down corner, having one of those is great. There's no doubt about that. But
they don't have a healthy one right now.
They don't. And your defensive backfield is mostly helped by you getting a pass rush. That's when those guys can take some risk. That's when they can play downhill. That's when they can go after a ball, cut under a route, like all of that stuff, because they know the ball is coming out early. And the Bears just don't have that enough of the time.
No, they don't. They do not. They don't have a consistent pass rush. They have gotten eaten alive against the run. You know, they're fifth worst in the NFL against the run. The last 2 weeks, they've given up a total of 392 rushing yards the last 2 weeks. And that means that your quarterbacks in play action that you're going against can eat you alive. And Malik Willis was 9 for 11 in play action. Brock Purdy ate you alive in play action because you as a defense have to be freaking out about stopping the run. You can't do it.
Now, I know that defenses have targeted TJ Edwards. In fact, offenses have targeted TJ Edwards. In fact, the coach of the Bears, when he was the offensive coordinator of the Lions, targeted TJ Edwards because he is aggressive. He wants to be someone that's gonna get to the spot and get to his run fit and make a play. But he's been taken advantage of quite a bit this year. And inside the game Sunday, it happened a lot where you would see that false step forward. Mm-hmm. And then look at all of the open space behind the linebacker level that San Francisco had, open windows to throw to.
TJ's been good on the Mully and Haw show all year long. I didn't hear him address the problems on the defense. Did you?
No. Here's what he had to say about it.
We were doing some uncharacteristic things, I feel like, in terms of how we were executing, you know, and I don't want to, again, you know, it's a good football team, obviously, you know, really good players, good offense. You know, they play well together. And but, yeah, I mean, we expect to go out there and execute at a high level, and we didn't. And I think, you know, we've shown that we can do it. So it's really getting down to the details and figuring out exactly kind of what went wrong and being very critical of ourselves. You know, it's one of those things we don't shy away from. So I know it'll be talked about at length in terms of, you know, what we can do better. But I just thought for the most part, man, they were able to dictate first and second down. So it made third down pretty difficult. But anytime, you know, a team's running the ball like that, you know, second and two, you know, that play sheet is open. So I think for us, it's really, again, man, it's being good on first and second down so that we don't have to, that we can get into what we want to get into on third down. And, you know, it's not first and two from the goal line. It's those things that we, you know, have some more options on what we can do.
I saw this number this morning to TJ Edwards' point. The Bears, 28th in the NFL on first down. They give up 6.1 yards on first down. That is way too damn much. That is second and four, second and three.
And you, and like TJ said, you can kind of call whatever you want.
Man.
Because if you end up in a third and four, you can also still run or pass it because the Bears' run defense hasn't been real strong either.
Play sheet's wide open.
It's wide open. Here's what our guy Matt Bowen had to say about the problems with the Bears' defense against San Francisco.
Okay, the first is in the secondary, cutting off the ball. So I always use the term cutoff angle. And we've talked about this before. They have to set an edge to your defense every time. And, you know, normally when you think about setting an edge, everyone thinks about the defensive ends, right? Well, that's the interior edge. You have to set a perimeter edge also. And you look at some of McCaffrey's plays in that game, one of his explosive runs, it's because the corner didn't come down to set the edge. Took a poor angle to the football. You can never allow the ball to get outside you. It sounds very basic, right? It sounds like we're talking about junior high football, but that's what it is. Down the goal line, when you have, and I see this too often in the NFL, it's really starting to bother me right now. When you're a corner and you are unblocked, and I use the term a crack block, right? And they crack inside and are a safety or a linebacker, you have to replace as a corner. Now you have to set the edge. But corners take this downhill outside angle instead of a 45-degree angle. When you take that outside angle, one, you're giving up one for one versus the lead block. You're giving up one for one. That's a minus because you're not defeating the block. But also, you're expanding the running lane. I see it every Sunday. I mean, it really bothers me because you have to teach that, if you're a secondary coach, to squeeze or restrict that running lane. Yes, you can't cut block anymore, cut tackle versus the lead blocker, but I never would ever teach that anyways because you're giving up one for one. You can still play with leverage. You can still get your pads down and restrict that running lane, and you get better at that. And also, the second level, it's hard against Kyle Shanahan, guys. There's so much pre and post that movement, and it forces some hesitation. You don't see second-level linebackers and safeties playing at the same speed because there is so much to process against that offense. And look, we can say the same thing against with Ben Johnson's offense. Go back to the Philly game, what they did. We saw the same result.
You know what I love about what we've got going here on the Score is TJ Edwards says it was just some fundamentals and some individual stuff and doesn't want to get specific.
Yeah, nor should he. I get that.
But then we get a chance to talk to Matt, and he got extremely specific.
Mm-hmm.
And he pointed the finger at guys cutting off the angles wrong. And when he talks about a corner not setting the edge and letting McCaffrey get outside, multiple times that was Nashawn Wright. And Nashawn Wright has been a practice squad corner for a lot of his career. He's had a wonderful year in forcing turnovers, but we have seen some issues in coverage. And Matt Bowen just told you the issues that you feel like you saw, you did see in run support. And this league is too damn good to get away with those kind of mistakes.
And there were some plays, and this is what I think is really good about Shanahan as a play designer, where you saw a pulling guard get out on Jalen, and he can't win that. Like, it's really hard for a corner to win that battle when a guard or a tackle is running right at you. And he got destroyed on a couple of those plays.
So that's both your corners.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it was Tyreek who was in there, you know, and maybe he had a different. I don't recall seeing Tyreek struggle as much as I definitely saw Nashawn struggle and Jalen struggle in the run game. But this is a challenge. There's a big thing that I want to figure out about the linebackers, and I'm hoping that we see it as soon as this weekend and certainly in the playoffs. After Noah Sewell got hurt, Dennis Allen did not use three linebackers on a single play the rest of the game. He had three linebackers often at the beginning, 13 different snaps for Sewell. So that's Tremaine Edmonds and TJ Edwards out there and your third linebacker. So in your base package, your 4-3 with four DBs. Once Noah Sewell got hurt, he did not go to three linebackers a single time. So he's in the nickel the entire time.
What I like to call the heavy nickel, because it's C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who can play like a safety. He can kind of play as like a weak side linebacker because he's so physical, that sort of thing.
So as a texter was asking, you know, why don't they play four linebackers? They didn't even play three. They didn't even play three. And I love the nickel. And we've talked so much about Kyler and DA adjusting to it, the league, and using more nickel. I get it. But if you're struggling this bad against the run, wouldn't it make sense to maybe use that third linebacker? And I'm sure it goes way deeper than what I'm saying. Who does he trust as that third guy in that weak side spot? Right? Who does he trust? Does he trust DeMarco Jackson in that spot? DeMarco Jackson is a backup middle. You know, does he trust him there? Would it be
NFC Defensive Player of the Week to sir?
I know, but it's usage and it's roles. It Amen, Agbambamiga, that he could trust there. I don't know who it would be, but I feel like you got to have that as an option. The fact that he didn't do it once after Noah got hurt is striking to me when they were eating you alive with the run game.
One of the good things that did come out of this game, and later on, like, I can imagine this is a project that I take on in late February or early March, of like going back and watching all the snaps for Austin Booker.
Are you going to have time for a project like that? Because you're getting certified in the air raid offense.
I'll do it on my nights off of being air raid certified.
I mean, because that's going to take a lot of time.
It is.
I've
looked at the course. The course is voluminous.
So what is it? Is it like one online course you got to take?
It's.
Or do you have to go in person and sit with 93-year-old Mouse Davis?
You can, but it is multiple parts. Like, the way that it's set up is pretty cool. Like, you go through the basics, then there's a whole section where you have to put together a game plan. Like, there's a lot, and then there's a big review. So while I'm doing that and getting ready to be air raid certified so that I can marry people on football fields.
Thank you for running with that. I believe anytime somebody takes an online course to get certified, it's so they can marry people, so they can officiate a marriage. And if it's air raid, you're looking to marry wide receivers.
I mean, it is.
No tight ends.
I'm only half kidding about this because it is very much in my profile.
Oh,
as,
of course. I'm fully kidding, but you are definitely only half kidding.
And look, like,
that's our show.
What I went through at Alabama, like, doing that stuff, and I actually found out that, like, online learning was in my golf bag because it's different, and it takes a level of discipline that I was concerned that I didn't have.
To turn off the phone and put it somewhere else?
And I mean, when I was taking classes, I was still hosting solo at night. So I'm doing that. I was at one point, I was doing the radio show, the television show, teaching my class at DePaul and studying at Alabama.
Yeah, that's too much.
But this air raid thing, when my professors would break down what the semester was going to look like I was like, okay, this air raid thing looks really challenging. And I'm like, okay, I think I might have it in me to do.
We got to challenge ourselves, man. We got to keep pushing and try to learn new stuff.
Yeah.
It's healthy.
Yeah. So
I support that.
But once I'm done with, I take a break from that, I can look at Austin Booker because I feel like, remember, Austin Booker just turned 23.
Yeah.
And most people thought that he would be in the year after draft, that he would be in this past draft instead of the draft that he was in.
Look, Austin Booker has shown us some stuff.
He's I'm very excited that he looks like a developing defensive end.
What's crazy is that when everybody's talking about the Bears needing to draft an edge rusher, he's not the one I imagine getting replaced. That's what's crazy.
Well, Montez has had a decent season. He got 10 sacks, I think, this year? But it feels like it's not as consistently menacing as it should be for the amount of money that he's making.
Of course.
I think Montez has played pretty well. There were some moments, though, where Purdy got him on zone read. He got him. Like, he was crashing down, and Purdy was a gotcha ass and strolling into the end zone.
Yeah, and it was almost always Austin Booker going against Trent Williams' backup, Austin Pleasance.
Yep.
Who had played 12 snaps before. Whatever. I want to turn the page. It's almost time to turn the page. Top of the hour. But before we do that, like Rick Hahn once said, we now pivot to the negative. Let's sit in something really awful from that game that we need to fully acknowledge.
Why have you been so excited to sit in the negative?
I just want to acknowledge just how bad it was.
Okay.
Just for one final thing, and then we can turn the page, and I won't have to bring it up.
Fair
again.
Enough. Like, that's actually a good way to do it. Like, get something out, and then we turn the page and get ready for the Lions.
Acknowledge what is. Be truth tellers with ourselves.
I like it.
Like Ben is asking the players to do.
I like it. Let's do that next here on The Score.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
4 seconds left, second and goal. Here is Williams. He's got to throw it to the end zone. Clock has expired. Williams keeps the play alive. He's looking. He's got to get rid of it. Retreating, he throws. Incomplete. It's over. And the Niners have won. Burden injured in the end zone. Clock finally strikes midnight on these Bears. Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers win here next Sunday against Seattle. And the road to the Super Bowl in the NFC comes through the place where they'll play the Super Bowl.
All right, look, it's Spiegel and Holmes on The Score. We're going to turn the page soon. But before we do, I just wanted to acknowledge just how awful the Bears' execution was in that moment. I am a positive person. Coming off that game, though I didn't think it was a moral victory, it still felt great to watch them score the points, and you zoom out and you feel good about the future and all of that. But that is a play that could change the course of your entire postseason. If you complete that play, you win that game.
And you're playing for the number one seed, theoretically, on Sunday.
You could host the NFC Championship game, even if it is the 49ers. You get them back at your place. That incredible offense. Now, you still might get to do it, yada, yada. But that is a moment where you've got to execute. And Ben Johnson has been open about his issues with that. He didn't get things in on time. And I don't think anybody's praised him more than me and you. And, like, he deserves all of it. But man, that is a whiff. They didn't even run the play that they wanted to run. They didn't even get to do it. It was immediate chaos. And oh my God, help me, Caleb. Bail me out. Here's Ben Johnson talking about it. This is the latest time that he talked about it when he was asked if DeAndre Swift was an option that Caleb should have been looking for on that chaotic play.
Ben, going back to that final play, how realistic of an option is Swift in the flat there? I know Caleb's looking down the middle of the field, but how realistic is it to expect him to see that type of play?
Yeah, I mean, with everything that was going on, I don't see that as a potential option. I think there was a little bit more chaos than what you would like in a situation like that. And so, I think Caleb did what he could to make chicken salad out of it.
So he wants to call his own situation chicken crap, and good for him for the honesty, and it is what it is. But let's acknowledge that they didn't even get to run a play that they wanted. The Niners rushed two men, and one of them got there.
One of them like came free on that play. What is happening?
They rushed two men and one of them came free and got there. It was Bryce Huff, right?
Yeah.
I think Huff got there. So Caleb had to panic and ad-lib and everything on a two-man rush. So just an absolute debacle of a moment that hopefully will not be what cost them a Super Bowl trip.
What I do like about it, though, is that in the aftermath of it, one, the head coach was front and center explaining his role and why it didn't work. Two, the quarterback not only acknowledged that there was an issue, but then covered for his head coach, being like, you know, I can, it's my job to make it right. Like, that's my job.
It's a good catch by you. They really have each other's backs these days.
It's great. Like, watching these two guys find all of the space in between them and come up with a great partnership that I feel like is growing with them is really wonderful to see.
I could not agree more. All right, fine. I got that out of my system. I'm doing a gratitude list.
Oh, good.
For things that I'm grateful for in 2025.
Okay.
And there's a lot of stuff on there. We could do it later or share it, but I'm just trying to figure out how high I should put the ZipRecruiter spot.
Man.
Because that thing, it continues to bring joy.
It's a bop, man.
It's just like
try it free.
Oh, you and I are feeling that. Like, we're bonding. We're growing closer as a show and a partnership. Tyler tried to talk over it for a minute.
Yeah, we didn't like that. You got to respect the ZipRecruiter commercial,
Tyler,
sir.
If you got stuff you need to tell us, you do it before that spot. All right.
Okay, I'll know in the future now. My apologies.
He's out here talking about other commercials. Stop. No, it's not the ZipRecruiter commercial.
It's like I'm hanging out with a beautiful woman. You're talking about some other beautiful woman. What are you doing? Shut up. I'm hanging out with ZipRecruiter. Man, that thing. It's the flow. It's the feel.
Dump them.
The vibe of the whole thing.
Jingles work.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They do. You would know.
I do know. Yeah, sometimes, you know, I mean, sometimes you get quality windows, siding, and doors, and it sticks in your head for decades.
Way longer than the paycheck.
I did not say that.
I did.
It's because you're my partner.
And then sometimes you maybe get clutch onto a product and you're like, ooh, in retrospect, that was a bad idea.
Oh, yeah.
To be the voice of this.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, there was that period where I was the voice of predatory loans. I was like me. Like, you hear me sing and you're like, oh, yeah, that guy, he sounds like predatory loans.
Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly, Chuck. You don't want that. You don't want that stapled to you. But there it is.
But because of that, you didn't have to take out any predatory loans because they paid you.
Not that year.
That's why. All right. We are done with the Bears 49ers game.
Oh, man.
We are going to turn the page and get you ready for the Bears Lions game and this weekend of NFC football. That is next here on The Score.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.